that Craig Mochaber has also said. Fundamentally, it will only change, not out of the good intentions of people, not out of the good intentions of corporations, not out of the moral decency of people or governments, but when they are forced by the people of their country to stand up to do the right thing. And, you know, I mean, we've had so much energy. Sadly, a good portion of it has just been fundamentally misplaced. You know, when you're chanting Free Palestine, that's wonderful. But what are you going to do to free them? When you're saying stop the genocide, what are you saying that we need to do to stop the genocide now? And I think that's why what we've seen, and when I was in at the Hague meeting, and I was talking to people and saying, there is something we can do, this uniting for peace. This is real. This is tangible. We need to make our countries do this. It was like people looked at me and was like, the first thing is like, are you for real? You know, how come we haven't heard of this for 22 months? That's a damn good question, you know? But yes, it is real. And it is something that can be implemented. And it has to be from the grassroots. Within 2 weeks, to give an example, we expect 30 countries of people's movements. When we say people's movements, you've heard of the overland, the two caravans overland, you've heard of the flotillas. These are the groups that have come on board initially. These are the groups who have virtually said, we have been doing what we can symbolically. Now we could do something objectively tangible as well. And that is the heart and soul of the majority of the people out here who have been protesting, or even just sitting in front of their television or their computer crying and saying, what can I do? You can get out there. I would recommend
KBOO Portland.
Our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive is coming. Tune in August 20th, where we'll bring you testimonials, anecdotes, facts, and more, all day long to celebrate National Radio Day. KBOO, made by people like you, for people like you.
You're listening to Rose City Native Radio. I'm your host, Jack, and joining me as always is Nick Yellowhorse. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right, trying to stay cool in these heat waves.
Yeah, they keep coming one after another, and I'm never ready for them.
No, I'm not either. And then it's like cold. Right now, it's like what, like mid-60s or something crazy? It's like raining.
No, I think now it's 80, just humid. It's so humid.
Yeah, it's very humid. It's terrible. And for all we know, next week's going to be like 99, 95 or some crazy stuff like that. You never... Oh, actually,
yeah.
Just looking at this... Mm-hmm. Just looking at the weather for actually this week, we got high of 82 on Tuesday, Wednesday high of 83, Thursday high of 90, Friday high of 97, Saturday high of 96, Sunday high of 93, and into the following week, Monday high of 91. This has been your Oregon weather reporting. You know what, Nick? We're going to switch over to some local news. There is an event coming up next week. It is the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition is coming to Portland. For those who don't know, that is a program that received a grant from the Department of Interior to conduct video interviews with Indian boarding school survivors all across the country to create a permanent oral history of Indian boarding schools and stories from there. And it was started actually by Secretary Deb Holland. So that will be coming to Portland on August 25th through 29th. Conducting interviews of folks who have survived from boarding schools in the Pacific Northwest and share their stories. So lots of folks, I'm assuming from Chamawa and other places, will be there. So the hope is to give a chance for Oregon and other folks, other survivors, to document their personal histories and continue sharing their testimonies to track this really dark point in American history among many. But it's important to have these stories, these voices of those who survived it. So that will be happening soon. They are going to be in Portland again. That'll be Monday, August 25th through Friday, August 29th. located at the Embassy Suites by Hilton Portland downtown on Southwest Pine Street. If you are a boarding school survivor who attended boarding school in the U.S. prior to 1970, you are invited. We will be posting the link for the form to register. There's also an info number if you want to call for details. The number is 651-650-4445. Again, the contact for the team, if you're interested in registering, is 651-650-4445. So they'll be coming to Portland next week, Monday, August 25th to 29th. The next stops they're going to be making after us will be South Dakota, New Mexico, and Arizona. Their website is boardingschoolhealing.org for more information there. Again, we'll be posting all of this and how you can get involved on our Facebook page, facebook.com/RoseCityNativeRadio. So right now, there is a tribe out in Florida, the Miccosukee tribe, is currently fighting what is known as alligator Alcatraz. Right now, they're working with a federal judge. So far, a federal judge at the beginning of this month blocked further construction for the facility. And they are working on a final decision that should be happening in the next few days, I believe. I can't tell time, but around like August, was this August 5th, I think, is when it happened. Something like that. August, I don't have the exact dates, my apologies. Basically early August, and it said it would take about 2 weeks to deliberate on the final verdict, but currently there is a temporary halt on construction for Alligator Alcatraz, and this is thanks to the tribe who is pushing for that. So the facility is actually located like right outside their res, so that's also like obviously that's a huge issue for them. So they've been pushing for this, and also like citing, you know, environmental concerns, you know, everything that it'll bring to their community, which is not good. So, I mean, even construction would be, you know, light pollution, all kinds of pollution. They live, it's just upstream from them as well. So who knows what it'll do to the water. So they joined a coalition of local environmental groups that, sued the state of Florida and the Trump administration for violating the, I believe it's the National Environmental Policy Act. And then this tribe joined the case to help push that forward and protect these lands. On Thursday. So that would be, sorry, let me do my math. So this was August 7th. And so we're waiting for about 2 weeks from then, which is coming up, for the final judgments on this. But again, currently there is a temporary hold on construction, which is awesome. We love that. I don't know. Nick, any thoughts on this? This tribe is kind of small. I mean, a lot of Florida tribes, no shade, but a lot of Florida tribes tend to be kind of small just with the history of everything that's happened out there. A lot of folks were sold into slavery. A lot of local tribes were and things like that. So this is a relatively small tribe that has had a pretty monumentous victory, I would say, against the Trump administration and the government at large.
My thoughts are it's great. I'm happy. I hope they stick to this, stick with the ruling, the sightings. It sounds like the main emphasis has been partly due to the fragile ecosystem in the area, and that I think that's where they're really trying to go for the angle and stop people from construction and everything. And like I said, I'm very happy. I just hope like they uphold this and that they listen and that the tribe's involvement just further strengthens it, because who's a part of this? Is that Noem lady a part of it?
In building it?
I want to say she was named in trying to get it. Yeah, because she's the current head of Homeland Security. And she's a mess. She's from South Dakota. If you don't know her, her name is Christy Noem or Gnome. I can't remember.
Christy Gnome, yeah.
And she's the one who, during COVID, when the tribes are shutting down federal highways in and out of the tribe's reservation areas, she was like, we need to send in the troops. We need to get this unblocked. How dare you stop the economy? And knowing what she has said, and how I want to say I read an article about how most South Dakotan tribes have banned her from any of like their reservations, is just telling. So I hope the government sees this act of a tribe's involvement in not that fashion and see it as a positive thing, because my word, just, I mean, part of it's also what we have as our current government and current politicians in their current seats. But I yes, it is very monumental that their influence is preventing this construction, and that I know, not even needed.
I mean, yeah, of course, it's definitely not needed, and you know, it goes against, well, I mean, everything. It's just the most vile, cruel, and evil thing possible. And I don't blame this reservation and these people for not wanting a concentration camp built on their lands. That's perfectly reasonable. Yeah, Christy Noem is a piece of work. She supported the Keystone Pipeline, shocker. And I believe it was, let me see here. I know it was like, I think you're right. I think it was like most of the native tribes out there. Here we go. So basically, it looks like all 9 tribes of South Dakota has banned her from entering their lands, which means that she's banned from basically 20% of South Dakota. There was some rumors that the Yakutun Sioux had not officially banned her, but that's kind of up in the air. But first it was Oglala, and then Cheyenne River Sioux, and then Standing Rock Sioux, Rosebud, and it was just like, Oglala was in February, then Cheyenne, then Standing Rock. Rosebud was in April, like just one right after the other. Sisseton, Wahpeton, Crow Creek, Santee Sioux, like just literally month after, like month, one after the other. And, you know, they've wanted her to apologize for many vile things that were said. I mean, she's been saying like, oh, there's an invasion coming over the southern border. Mexican drug cartels are perpetuating violence here in South Dakota, which is insane. She, you know, obviously she has no evidence with that stuff. The way she talks is just, again, vile. And she claims also that she was getting calls and texts from people in Pine Ridge who were asking for her help. And she, it was insane. She says they live with 80 to 90% unemployment. Kids don't have any hope. They don't have parents who show up and help them. And was saying that these cartels and things are infiltrating places like Pine Ridge because they have no hope in their vulnerable, and they're begging, please come help us, which sounds like something Trump would say. But I mean, again, not surprised here. She did apologize in January, which is shocking to me. But either way, it looks like Santee Sioux looks like it's removed its banning of her from its land. But man, I guess Santee Sioux is the one that removed the ban from her because she apologized for a misunderstanding between them. I'm not exactly sure what that was, but in a direct quote from the tribal government, it says the governor has shown us that she is committed to protecting the people of South Dakota, including the citizens of the 9 tribal nations who share mutual borders with the state, and expressed its support for her nomination as Secretary of Homeland Security. Oh, so, I mean, there's a lot going on here. It's a lot going on with this. And, you know, again, tribes are going to make up their own minds with these things, good or bad. I mean, I still shout out to all these other tribes that have banned her from their lands. I think that's a appropriate response and decision to have. Yeah, if you know Christy Noem, she has a laundry list. Her Wikipedia is very long on all these kinds of things that she there's a lot of terrible things that she has said and done. So with that in mind and her trying to build this, I'm glad again that tribes and also just the local community in general is pushing back against this and doing everything they can. I'm not sure if, I don't know, I've had a lot less faith in the government lately. I don't know about you, Nick.
I think it's, you know, I think there might be a good reason why this terrible presidency and it's terrible people doing terrible things. I'm not going to say there's no hope, but it's just, yes, I can hope as much as I can, but I don't think that, I think it's just really hard to see the silver lining in it all, and that any action that we try to do as Native people for Native people just feels like it's going to not be listened to.
Right. Because, you know, we're not seen as, I don't know, people. Seen as U.S. citizens.
The presidency, when, what was that executive order? I can't remember, earlier this year, stating something about naturalization and birthright citizenship and how Native Americans and our citizenship would be potentially affected by that. And that was a key factor in why a good number of tribes and lawyers had stepped in and said, yeah, we can't do this because you now are invalidating an entire group of Americans, you know? And so...
Right. And there's already been issues with border tribes like my tribe, Pascua-Yaqui, and even Akimalotam. There are border tribes along the border of Mexico, and folks are getting deported even though they are tribal members. So it's sloppy, it's terrible, and our sovereignty, our right to exist has always been threatened. That is what this country is built on, is to exterminate us and our rights and our claim to the traditional lands we have. But it's just kind of being bumped up to 11 with that as well. And for many Americans, I mean, not just us, but still, we continue to be in the crosshairs of this fascist government. So again, I really commend the folks out in Florida, the Miccosukee tribe. Shout out to you guys. Like, that's huge to just stand up and say no, and just like really hard say no. So much love out into Florida. I really hope that the judge makes a decent decision here. I'm hopeful, but I'm also skeptical, you know. So we shall see. I know that a lot of stuff has already come in and they've already been attempting to build there. The buildings, I think, that are there, like, flooded at one point. Like, it's a mess. So hopefully that project kind of falls through, but we will see, since there's a lot of effort in pushing for this project to go through. So good luck out there to the Miccosukee tribe and all the folks out in Florida who are trying to block this. But yeah, I think they really set a good example for us. And, you know, it's things that tribes have been doing, right? We did it with Keystone Pipeline. We've done it with many things over the years. Currently, Oak Flat is also going through similar-ish things, fighting the government. Oak Flat's been fighting for, I want to say over a decade at this point or longer. But, yeah. And we'll try to give updates as they come. Again, currently, we are in the middle of the two-week period for the temporary pause in construction. And it should be coming out, I think, on Thursday the 21st. Again, I am not good at math. So sometime in the next week or so, basically. And once we have more updates, of course, we will report on those. But this is where we are currently, that there is a temporary restraining order on continued construction at Alligator Alcatraz. So
save the river, save the seas, save the mother and her family. How can you take what you want and say that we are free? If you put oil in the water, we won't sit quietly. And they were singing, stand up, stand up for what's right. Don't walk silently to the night. Take my hand and we'll see us through. If you fight for me, I'll fight for you. Save the people who are in need. How can you do what you want and say you come in peace? If you don't open your eyes, how can you see? And we were cheering, stand up, stand.
You're listening to 90.7 FM KBOO Portland.
Yeah. And speaking of litigation, we have another story about the University of California might be under new legal trouble with the tribes. And that story, if you heard, is that the University of California has significant Native American artifacts that are housed with them for probably they would argue research purposes or something of the like. But over the past 5 years, there have been 3 audits to the University of California in 2019, 2021, and as most recently, April of 2025. And they have done next to nothing in returning sacred artifacts and cultural items to the tribes. And now they're potentially under legal threat, but we'll see. This is coming from a law, the Native American Graves Protection and Recreation Act, which was passed more than, I think, 30 years ago now. And these audits had came and gone, and this university said, sure, probably to it, and maybe even signed an agreement and said, yeah, we'll have this schedule, we'll do this, but these audits show little to no action. And, you know, that just... I mean, when was it? Was it last year that there was an Eastern museum giving back Native American artifacts that was heralded? Do you remember that story?
Yes, I believe so. I do remember that story. I do remember. I just don't remember who it was. I got their stuff back. Let me check.
Let me see if I can pull it up.
Was it a university?
It was. I think it was tied to a university or an anthropological thing. And I remember it was last year. It was like it was actual remains and items with the remains as well. And it was one of the larger museums over there on the East Coast.
2 days ago, Pennsylvania State Museum closed their Native American exhibit and are returning human remains and artifacts to the tribes. That's good.
That sounds right.
Is it Pennsylvania, you think? I feel like it was. There's been something. I just don't know. Oh, wow. OSU is also returning human remains and cultural artifacts to tribes here last year. Well, damn.
Yeah, I remember it was a string of large museums or universities returning a bunch of things. And it just, I mean, this seems very common. And then it's not even solely an indigenous experience. Let me take that back. It is a very indigenous experience because we have, I mean, look at the British and what they've taken in their museums and even from fellow European countries and how they don't want to give them back. And it just, I think the argument of like, well, this has scientific value. And I think it's like, okay, cool. But also that's probably a person that didn't want to go that way in their afterlife, you know? And it's, I think if it was directly affecting my tribe and how that might, I'm rambling, but it's just crazy how somebody says, hey, we have noted these items are significant to us. And a lot of tribes do have situations where they're like, I mean, you have your lineages. You can tell my grandpa is related to this person who is related to that person who was X significant person, you know? And to have descendants come down and say, we need those back because, you know, it's ours and not yours. And it should have never been yours. And for you to not listen or not do anything or not have any action is wholeheartedly disrespectful. And the argument of academia superseding somebody's rights is, I think, crazy.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So with the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, that's a federal act. It's about 30 years old. It's 1990, so it's over 30 years old. And the thing that I have kind of noticed, though, and I say this like with my limited understanding, these types of federal laws, especially when pertaining to things like this or natives in general, they are made and enacted, but they have no teeth to enforce it. I mean, look at ICWA, right? ICWA has these laws in place that are to protect Indigenous children from being fostered out or adopted out, separated from their community, their family, things like that. But that as well, for over, I believe, 40 years, had no teeth to enforce it. And the issue still continued even to this day. There have been some changes to it. I think back in like 2016, 2017, that gave it a little bit more tools to enforce it. However, again, there is no enforcement with this. There are no consequences if you don't follow this. Trading or like trafficking like Native human remains and artifacts, there are like penalties. It's a felony. You can, you know, get a year in prison, more convictions, $100,000 fine, like, and this has been like amended over the years. The conviction for trafficking the human remains and everything got bumped up to basically a year or one day in jail, and also like it could also be with more conviction, 5 years to 10 years. That only got updated in 2022. But again, like, yes, it's a criminal offense. How are these being enforced? What tools and options do we have and able to enforce this? Because we are still seeing universities, multiple universities across the world, but specifically, you know, since this is a federal act, specifically in the United States, violating this like extremely, and especially, you know, in this situation where they're just not doing it. They have been talked to about it. They have been, you know, requested, and they're just not. They're just not doing it. And it's incredibly frustrating. So there's going to be a hearing, or there was a hearing happening, right? They were doing some kind of legal things with that.
I believe it's going to be upcoming.
Okay.
Just that... this is another one of those instances where if we hear more, we'll update you. But right now we're in this position where everything's being set up to, after the hearing, any potential argument of civil penalties against the University of California and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So right now, the universities that are currently being investigated is UC Berkeley, UC Santa Barbara, and UC San Diego have not been complying with this, and they're given like repatriation expenses, I think, for like shipping and whatever is needed to ensure that these are given back safely. And these, at least these three, have just pushed it back. We'll do it next year. We'll do it next year. And then some. And they're just not actually doing it, according to an auditor. So And there have been years of people speaking out about it. I mean, years of people bringing it up and speaking out about it. And the campus hasn't really replied in a useful manner, or like been pretty proactive on it right now. So there's a lot of excuses. There's a lot of things that, you know, should be appropriated but aren't. And yeah, so not sure where this quote is from.
Oh,
hold on, sorry.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that the University of California's hearing will occur tomorrow.
Oh.
So tomorrow, perfect. Tomorrow they'll be talking about it and seeing what next steps are, because some of the things, the excerpts from it all, the audit in April were that there's lack of accountability and urgency to promptly return the items, that their office president isn't in compliance with the federal law, and that the university doesn't even know how much they have right off the bat. And wow. So I think that's what they're going to talk about tomorrow. Tomorrow being August 19th is when they'll be having this hearing to see what next steps are. And yeah, it's crazy to think that you've had 30 years to at least implement something and that you don't even know the extent of what you've stolen is.
Yeah. According to the auditor's report that was done, I believe, last year, basically, and I quote, according to the audio or the auditor and a critique of how the universities are currently handling this, quote, the university does not know the full extent of its NAGPRA, that's like the short form of it, I'll just say, of its Native American collections, and it does not know how much work remains to achieve full repatriation and has not properly cared for all items it possesses, including one on campus that has several outstanding loans of potential cultural items and another campus where some potential cultural items were stolen in 2022. So as you can tell, they take real good care of these artifacts. You know, it shows how much effort and care they put into these things. So it sounds like, it looks like the audit was actually published in April of this year. And not tracking any of the work, not knowing the scope of what they have, lapses in care for items, all kinds of issues and things that they're coming up with right now, and even having some theft and not really, I don't know if they're not even really doing anything about that. So it's messy, and we will let you know. We have so much breaking news, I guess. So again, as Nick said, it'll be happening tomorrow, August 19th. So we'll get back with any updates on this currently. But again, this is an issue that's been going on for years, and some universities are doing something positive about it. I believe it was Pennsylvania currently that is returning things. Yeah, so actually, as of 2 days ago, Pennsylvania State Museum has closed its entire Native American exhibit and is planning to return human remains and the artifacts back to the tribes. So shout out to Pennsylvania State Museum in Harrisburg. That is awesome. And they have worked to identify objects for Native American, you know, according to NAGPRA, basically, and are working on making sure those have been returned, which is amazing. So they're permanently closing it as of It looks like the entire museum is closing, but the exhibit is not expected to reopen at all, and they are working on giving those things back, and that's incredibly important. So they're working in collaboration with tribal leaders, which is also part of the federal act, as you need to adhere to the tribal protocol is. You need to work side by side with these tribes to make sure these are returned and identified in the proper manner. So shout out to Pennsylvania State Museum. I know locally here, OSU has returned some human remains and artifacts to the tribes up here in Oregon. So there are plenty of universities that are doing the work, but at the same time, and also I think in California as well, particular, similar-ish to Florida, there are very small bands of natives in California, and oftentimes, laws in place and sovereignty and things like that, they're often very disrespected, pushed to the side, like absolutely not heard because they are smaller or all these other things. California is definitely one of those that really does not adhere to those federal laws, and there's been a lot of pushback for it, but again, there's a lot of lethargy, I guess you could say, about it. They really just don't put in the effort. So we'll get back to you on updates with that. Fingers crossed for those folks to get their relatives returned and hold these universities accountable and make a example out of them. An example of, if you can't keep your stuff, I mean, just the utter disrespect of these things and human remains of all that, but not taking good care of it. We don't know how many we have. We're not really keeping track. They're just things that we've had or bought or whatever. These things were stolen. Like, really zero care for these artifacts that they have received, almost as if they're just novelties to have. So, yeah, that is another thing that is happening currently, and we will, again, keep you updated on that.
Yeah.
And now, in other recent news.
I just wanted to say, the final bit of context I want to frame in this is that these items that museums are returning are big and small. They're not necessarily like, here's a bone fragment, or maybe this was a piece of jewelry or partial of a rug. Right. We're talking like even larger items. There has been reported that there's a museum that's out there who's sending back a whole longhouse. Yes, they're returning a literal longhouse and like canoes and like things of that nature. So just to put it in perspective, like, these museums are not taking small items. They're taking huge, significant cultural items from us across the board. So just put that in your mindset when you're thinking about this, and how, like, maybe someone out there might be thinking, what if the tribe just wants their jewelry back, or like the beadwork or whatever? And it's like, no, like,
right,
we're talking like physical building scale sometimes, and how culturally significant wild those are. Because I know some of the logs, the Suquamish tribe, their museum has some of the logs from their original longhouse that was basically like the port of Seattle. Yeah, so like, we're talking some big, some small, some are massive. So just wanted to put that context out there as well.
No, that's a really good context to have. And even, like you mentioned, like, oh, here's a bone. There's not like, oh, here's a bone fragment, or oh, here's an arrowhead. You know, it's huge buildings like that, huge cultural significant things like that, totem poles, longhouses, but also like entire human skeletons. These are grave robbers. I know that there was a chief from Hawaii that was recently, his remains were returned. I believe it was from Hawaii, but like, significant people to the culture as well, but grave robbing, building stealing, is, like you said, it's not just a dress, a broken arrowhead, some jewelry, a moccasin or two. Like, this is huge entire chunks of our history and community being stolen from us. And I don't know, I feel like it also contributes to the erasure of pre-colonial America and the history with it, and being presented in that narrative of how primitive we were and there wasn't any kind of civilization before colonizers came, when in reality a lot of these artifacts actually show there was. So that's crazy. I didn't know about the longhouse thing. That's wild. Well, Nick, that has been the news. A lot of current updates, a lot of current events happening, which feels a little bit like cliffhangers. We don't have any final verdicts on things yet, and they're all happening within this week, and then some. So yeah, any final thoughts on the topics, or just final thoughts in general on things we've, you know, been discussing, or thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams for the people who are listening?
I think the only thing I want to do is shout out to Native radio station WOJB. They serve Wisconsin and their Woodwind area. It is a Native radio owned by the, who are they? The Blackcourt Ore's band or tribe of Ojibwe. They got affected by the recent cuts to a lot of radio programming. So just want to shout them out. If anybody out there wants to have another perspective on Indigenous sites and radio, mm-hmm. perhaps you can listen to them. I think, yeah, it's, I only wanted to shout it out because I enjoy being able to be here on KBOO talking about my perspective and my side and my views on, like, exactly what we heard today. And I appreciate that. And I just wanted to highlight WOJB. That's it.
You can check them out at wojb.org. Nick, you actually bring up a really good point. A lot of tribal radio stations, but also a lot of community nonprofit radio stations like KBOO have been affected by the cuts that are happening currently. And it has been quite a journey for those who are trying to make it work, you know. So shout out to them for and other tribal community, you know, tribal radio stations that are doing their best to continue to get their voices out there and evolved, really. It's really difficult to navigate. We're hoping to figure things out as they happen. But yeah, and of course, you know, we'll update on things here for KBOO as well. And yeah, it's been pretty difficult. You do bring up a good point on that. There's been a lot of changes funding wise, and no matter what, we're gonna do our best to continue and get our voice out there. But yeah, currently with the Corporation of Public Broadcasting being shut down, which is terrifying, it has been, you know, it's one of the largest single sources of funding for public radio, television, online, all kinds of services like that. It has been distributing more than 70% of its funding to more than 1,500 locally owned public radio and television stations. So with that being cut, with that ending, it has created quite a stir with that. And it's scary. It's really scary.
And it's a great segue to let everybody out there know that you can always go to kboo.fm/give if you want to help us out, because we're a part of it. We're not going to receive that grant funding as well. It's affecting WOJB in a more significant amount. The report said about 40% of their own budgeting has come from grants from the public broadcasting, and KBOO also receives these grants, and it would be great if those listening can help and donate to KBOO.FM/give.
Yes, that's right. This, you know, this program has been brought to you by you, the donors. We have been going on for over 50 years, which is wild. But yeah, you can help by going to kboo.fm/give. Also, if there are other public radio stations, there's a lot of other public radio stations here in Portland. Also, check in with your local rural and tribal stations to see if they are accepting donations right now. Currently, it is up to us to help all pull together and, you know, community support to keep these things alive, to keep these voices heard. It's incredibly important. So keep an eye on that. I think that's something we will also discuss as we check in with maybe some other tribal radio stations, and also give you updates, of course, on KBOO and how that has affected us as well. In the latest KBOO bulletin, they have kind of walked us through what's going on with you know, with that being shut down, how that affects us as well. So if you go to kboo.fm, you can find out more information of how to support, how to get involved, and sign up for the KBOO news bulletins that are sent out via email and are very informative as to what's going on with us, what's going on in the city, and how you can support. So with that being said, yeah, protect public radio and TV and tribal and rural radio stations. We're here to support. We're here to, you know, I mean, I just walked into a radio station. That's all I did. I just walked into KBOO and was given this amazing honor and opportunity to continue this slot of Indigenous programming that KBOO has had for, I mean, almost, I think, for around 45 years or more, and to continue that tradition. Again, it's a great honor to have taken that on and being given the opportunity to do that. And there are so many other radio stations out there that provide these opportunities for tribal folks, and tribal radio stations in general are a good community space for folks to learn really helpful programs and skills that they can bring out into the real world. And again, to just get more comfortable with speaking out and raising your voice for things that are important in your community. So please support all your local radio stations, public radio stations, and TV. We'll try and have some more resources available for things overall. If there are funds for that, we'll get back to you on that as well. This episode was a big cliffhanger episode, like I said, but that just means you have a lot to look forward to in the next episode, so stay tuned for that. I want to thank everybody for listening today. You can find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. We post updates on there mostly, and you can find more information about the station at large and the various shows that are available, including ours, at kboo.fm. Any closing words, Nick?
No, I think I had to say what I wanted to say this week, and I appreciate everyone out there listening, and of course you.
I appreciate you too, Nick. Thank you again for listening, everybody, to Two Natives Ramble for an hour. And we will see you next week.
We'll be right back. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934.